name was what? Abimelech. Who was his father? Gideon. So that's the connection to the previous three chapters we've looked at. 6, 7, and 8. This is the ninth chapter. Did I not print enough? Jason, how many do you have left? Does everybody have the new lessons? Okay, I'll make more as we need them. Thank you all. All right, this chapter will focus on the ambition, how this man was driven to do something that God never called him to do. Thank you. So far, we've seen the familiar phrase in the stories has been, and it's been phrased not exactly the same way each time, but more or less the phrase has been, and God raised up so-and-so, or God called so-and-so to judge Israel. And again, the judgment is more along the lines of redemption from oppression rather than rendering judgments or rendering decisions in matters as we would normally think of a judge. So again, Abimelech is the only non-judge ruler. Sometimes he's called the Bramble King, if you do any reading. And of course, that comes from the parable that Jotham told in this chapter about the briars or the bramble who would rule over the trees. And we'll come to that in the chapter. Something I pointed out Wednesday night that we'll say again today, at chapter 8 and verse 28 is the last time we'll see the phrase in the book. And again, it's not been stated the exact same way each time, but basically the phrase, when a judge would redeem the people and the land enjoyed peace or the land enjoyed an undisturbed rest for a certain length of time. The last time we saw that, or that we will see that, is in chapter 8. We won't see that phrase anymore throughout the rest of the book. And that tells us, I think, that from there on out, it's going to be constant turmoil, constant trouble. And again, not just from one direction, but on all sides, as they were continually oppressed from all directions. And from within, Brother Lambert, you're correct. So I think this indicates another level of deteriorating spirituality among the people, as they continue to commit, of course, in the book, what is the major sin? Idolatry. They're falling down before other gods. They're being unfaithful to God, and they're choosing to follow other gods. This story takes place in Manasseh, the story of Abimelech. The two cities that we'll see, of course, Shechem and Thebez. If you look on the Bible map, you'll see that they are cities that are in the tribal area of Manasseh. And we'll notice that as we go through the story. Okay. I've asked you first off, let's describe Abimelech. How is he described to us at the start of the book? Okay, we are told that he's the son of Gideon by the concubine that dwelt in Shechem. And we learned that, of course, from the last part of chapter 8. So his mother was not even a full legal wife of Gideon. She was just one of his concubines, a wife, so to speak, of lesser legality, but Gideon fathered him by this woman. But what else do we see about him? Of course, he can't help that. That's not under his control. But what did he do? What was his behavior that tells us about what kind of man this is? All right, he wants something. What does he want? He wants to be in charge. He wants to be in control. So let's look now. In verse 2, he comes back to Shechem, where his mother lives, and he sort of gathers the men together in the city there. And I want you to look how tactfully he talks. He would be just as an apt politician today as he was back then. He would fit right in Washington, wouldn't he? No problem fitting in. He says, "Which is better for you, that 70 men, all the sons of Jerubbaal," again, Jerubbaal is Gideon, "rule over you, or that one man rule over you? Which is better?" And he also says, and don't forget something else, the last part of verse 2. "I'm one of you." Now, they're not one of you, but I come from here. This is where I was born. This is where I was raised. This is where I live. I'm just like you. You're like me. I'm like you. So really, he's trying to steal away the hearts of the men. And verse 3, his mother's relatives spoke all these words on his behalf in the hearing of all the leaders. So he gathers together certain men, then they take this same message to the leaders, and they're already convinced. So what was the overall reception of Abimelech's offer in Shechem? Yeah. We're with you. Abimelech, he is our relative. So to sort of seal the deal, and again, the basis is he was our relative, so how was the deal finalized? What told Abimelech that they were serious about their agreeing to this? Okay. Now, where did they get this money? Wasn't it from an idol's temple? From Baal-Berith? They got the money from idol worship. Okay. And they gave it to Abimelech. That's how they agreed. Now, what did he do with the money? All right. He turned right around, and he had to go out and buy a gang, didn't he? Went out and bought some, my version says some reckless fellows or some worthless men. Could we use the word thugs? Vain thugs. Just a gang to sort of be his little band of merry men, if you will. All right. They could have been, probably were cutthroat. I mean, they were just ruthless people. So, right off the bat, let's ask the question. What does it say about a person who willingly associates with that kind of crowd? He is that kind of person, right? He is that kind of person. This was his choice to associate with them, and that's exactly what he did. So he used the money to hire worthless or reckless fellows, men, to form a gang. Pardon? Okay, yeah, the birds of a feather flock together. That's an old phrase we have, and that's a good way to think about this. All right, so now he's got two things. He's got the support of Shechem, and he's got a gang. Well, what's the next thing he does? That's right. He's got to get rid of the competition. Well, who's his competition? It's his 70 half-brothers. So he goes to Ophrah, and he removes his political rivals, if you will. And, of course, he kills them all, it says, on one stone or in one place, except for one. And his name was Jotham. He's the youngest. He escapes. And so he saw them, though they're his half-brothers, his family, all sharing the same father, of course. But he doesn't see them as his brothers. He sees them as his rivals. And if I really want to do, or if I'm going to do what I want to do, which is rule, then I've got to remove all the competition. And so he kills them, heartlessly, removes them from the scene, if you will. And now he's good to go. And so afterwards, what happened? What did Shechem do, or the men of Shechem do? King. They declared him king. Look in verse 6. So then the men of Shechem, and also says all those from Beth Milo, assembled together. They went and made Abimelech king by the oak of the pillar which was in Shechem. So, as far as they're concerned, when you publicly declare someone king, that's pretty official. And you've stated where your loyalties lie. This was not done secretly, if you will. Now, I'm just bringing up the fact that back again in chapter 8, 22 to 23, how does what's happened so far connect back to what Gideon said back there? What was the offer that came to Gideon? How about you be king, and not just you, but your sons and even the next generation, your sons and your grandsons? As far as we're concerned, Gideon, you can begin your own dynasty. We're just that comfortable with you. After all, what had Gideon just done? He rescued them. He brought them out of oppression from the Midianites. And Gideon's basic answer was, obviously, he said, no, what was his reason? You've got a leader, which is the Lord. You have a ruler already. Let's just submit to him. So Gideon was more inclined to follow God. But what about Abimelech? I don't see any inclination on his part to be content to let God be the ruler. No, he wanted to rule. He wanted that position. And so we're going to portray him in this chapter as a very ambitious, ambitiously driven man to want this. Entirely carnal, unscrupulous. He's a scoundrel. There's not much good character about him. Okay, let's look now at verses 7 to 21. And the focus here will be on what person? All right, Jotham. Again, Jotham is the youngest son of Gideon who escaped the slaughter of Abimelech when the 70 sons of Gideon were killed. So he hears about, and I'm calling this Abimelech's coronation, he hears about that. And so you'll see in verse 7, he climbs to the top of Mount Gerizim. And he lifted his voice and called out, and thus he said to them, "Listen to me, O men of Shechem, that God may listen to you." I've got something to say, and I want you to hear me out. So he then utters some versions say it's a fable or it's a parable. It's a little story that's got an intended purpose. Let's read the parable. Scott, if you'll read for us, please, verses 8 through 14. That's the parable. All right, here's just this little story that Jotham tells. Now, obviously, I think already we can see the meaning. But Jotham's trying to be diplomatic about this and trying to get... What's he trying to get them to see? What's Jotham's intention by telling this story? This guy that you've anointed king, he's not worth much. Now, that's one thing. But really, is the intent of the parable... Is its focus to about Abimelech, or is it to the people? It's to the people. What's he want them to see? You have made a very, very tragic error in siding with this man and agreeing to let him rule over you because he's not anything. That's right. Very good, Brother Lambert. The focus there, his words again, last part of verse 7. Listen to this story so that God may later hear you, that you would once again have a good relationship with God, that you'd have fellowship with Him, and He would be able to hear your prayers sort of along those lines. So, the trees and the vine, the olive tree, and then it says the fig tree, and then the vine. All these three, we'll call them growths, these growths of vegetation, these plants, if you will, and trees, they were noble in that. What did they provide? As is shade, the olive oil, fruit, grapes off the vine. These were noble, these were honorable things. What is bramble? Do all the versions say bramble in verse 14? Pretty much say bramble? All right. What is bramble? Scrub, brush, briars. Some versions may indicate it's... what's it good for? Nothing. That's right. It's not even good to service firewood because it just goes away to nothing. It doesn't provide any long-lasting burning or heat. Yeah, the Brer Rabbit, and they all knew that, didn't they? Okay. Well, it was anything but noble. So here you have, if these specific trees in the parable refer to someone, some writers say, well, it's obvious that the olive tree, the first one mentioned, refers to who? Gideon possibly does, or could just be just a general application. I think we'd have no trouble identifying the bramble. That's obviously Abimelech. You have these noble who were offered the position, and here's the difference. They were offered the position to rule, and what did they say? No. It's we need to be content to let God rule over us. Was Abimelech offered the job? No, he sought it. That's the difference. He wanted it. Now, they agreed to do it, yes. But that's, again, how they're different. Abimelech is this ambitious man who is driven by power. Do you know anybody driven by the greed and power of ruling? Well, lots of folks that way. Now, that's just entirely carnal to have that kind of ambition. That's how we set them apart. So, Jotham tells this story, and now it's time to make the application. That's through verse 15. Let's look at, now this is question 4, page 19. Here's the application, verse 16. Now therefore, he says, if you have dealt in truth and integrity, well, you can stop right there and know that they have not, but he's making the point. If you have dealt in truth and integrity in making Abimelech king, and if you have dealt well with Jerubbaal and his house, and we know they have not, and have dealt with him as he deserved, verse 17, what does Jotham remind them about? That's right. Now listen, of course, he knows they do know this, but he brings it to their remembrance. My father fought for you and risked his life and delivered you from the hand of Midian. But you have risen up against my father's house today, and you have killed his sons 70 men on one stone, and have made Abimelech, the son of his maidservant, king over the men of Shechem, because he's your relative. So that's just a side point that he makes, verse 17 and 18. But now verse 19. He's back to his application. So then, if you have dealt in truth and integrity with Jerubbaal and his house today, then what's he say? All right. There's no problem here. Rejoice in Abimelech, and let him rejoice in you. This is entirely proper. It'd be a good thing to have this fine, noble man as king. He's speaking, of course, here, tongue-in-cheek, very rhetorically. But, verse 20, if not, that is to say, if there is the absence of integrity, which there is, he knew it, and of course they knew it too, then what's he say? All right, let fire come out from Abimelech and consume the men of Shechem and Beth Milo. Doesn't stop there. And what else? All right, that's right. Let fire come from them and let it consume Abimelech. We're going to be content to let you destroy one another. Have you ever heard the phrase someone say when they get caught in a bad situation that they're swimming with the sharks? What's that typically mean? It means you're somewhere that you've really got no business being. And it's going to come back and get you. Well, what's happened, or what's fixing to happen here in the next few verses between Abimelech and the men of Shechem? Conflict. They're going to turn against one another. So what happens typically when you get people of the world together who are not driven by principle, they're not governed by any godly convictions, and they strike a bargain, they strike an accord along some line at some point, and they agree then to partner together in something. But again, see, none of them have any principle. What's going to happen? Eventually, they're going to start infighting, anarchy. How do a pack of wolves usually act when there's just like one piece of meat? Well, they don't sit down and share it, I'll tell you that, not willingly. It's every man for himself. And that's what's going to happen here. And so Jotham's curse is, okay, if there's integrity in this whole thing, then there's not going to be any problems. But if there's the absence of truth and integrity and right has been done, then he's going to consume you and you're going to consume him. You're going to consume one another. Anarchy. Is that what happened? That's entirely what happened. And the rest of this story, as we'll see. So, yes, go ahead, Norm. Norm's question is, it's in verse, lost my place here. Where is it? Yeah, verse 15 in the parable. If in truth you are anointing me as king over you, come and take refuge in my shade. This is the bramble talking. But if not, may fire come out from the bramble and consume the cedars of Lebanon. His question is, would this have results then as far north as Lebanon? The answer is, I don't know. Oh, affecting all in the kingdom. Like its effects will be far, far felt. I think that'd be a good point to make. Norm, I hadn't thought about that. This will not just be a localized issue. It will affect many. Could be. Anybody else have a comment about that? I think that's a good point to bring up. Okay, so he gives his blessing if it's been done right, but if not, of course, he knew that it had not. After all, what had he had to do personally previously when they came to Shechem? He had to run. He had to flee for safety. So after he speaks the parable, what's he have to do one more time? He's got to run again. He's got to flee for his own life. So he reminds them of their ruthless behavior. He concludes by pronouncing this judgment, a curse upon them, and then after he has to flee for safety again. This is Jotham doing this for his own well-being. All right? Well, we come now to verses 22 through 25, which is sort of the next section. Here's how God gets involved in this. We just learned a simple truth, verse 22. Abimelech ruled Israel. He ruled, but we can't call him a judge because God never raised him up, but God let him rule. For how long? 3 years he ruled. Then what did God do? Or what did God allow to happen? All right, he sent a spirit of evil, an evil spirit, between Abimelech and the men of Shechem, or Shechem, and the men of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech. See, they've already turned on him. God's at work in this. What did they do? What's some specifics that's mentioned here? All right, look in verse 25 particularly. The men of Shechem set men in ambush against Abimelech, that is on the top of the mountains, and they robbed all who might pass by them along the road. And it was told to Abimelech. What are they hoping to prove by robbing other people in the territory that Abimelech rules? That's right. He can't keep law and order around. He can't even keep the peace. So they're trying to discredit him among everyone else. That's how they're looking to get him to not be so favorable and so popular. And all this was told Abimelech, you see there at the end of verse 25. So already we see the fire coming out from the trees to consume the bramble, or disconnect, the tension between the parties who at first were so tight. You rule over us. Or he said, let me rule over you, and they certainly agreed to that. This was a divine judgment. We know about how. We'll look at verse 23. Why did God... Well, it's verse 24, actually. Why did God send this evil spirit? What was God's purpose in doing this? All right, this is retribution. You're right, Brother Lambert. It's judgment. The men of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech in order that the violence done to the 70 sons of Jerubbaal might come, and their blood might be laid on Abimelech, their brother, who killed them, and on the men of Shechem, who strengthened his hands to kill his brothers. So who does God hold responsible for the murder of Gideon's 70 sons? Abimelech, and not just him, but the men too. His gang, the men of Shechem, or Shechem there. All right, so a pact that's formed by ruthless men has no principle, does it? And again, my phrase, this pack of wolves, it often implodes, doesn't it? They turn on one another so easily because they don't have any loyalty to anybody except who? That's right. I'm only concerned about me and what I want. And we can't expect anything else other than that. And God used this reality to accomplish His will in this story. But this behavior, do you still see this today among people? Well, of course you do. The world's a cutthroat place. And that's why I said earlier, sometimes if we're not careful, and we try to advance ourselves in ways that may not be right, we're going to be swimming with the sharks. And they'll devour us. They'll get us. It happens every time. We've got to always be on our toes, always be watchful and vigilant with what we're trying to do. We're led by the principles of the gospel of Christ. We must, of course, live that way. All right, now we turn again and look at someone else, Gaal. Verses 26 through 29. Who was Gaal? All right, he's the son of Ebed. He comes with his relatives. And as you read Gaal's story, who does it sound like? Sounds just like Abimelech, doesn't it? It's very, very similar to Abimelech's situation. He came to Shechem, and he did what Abimelech had done. We see here, the end of verse 26, what's already happened? What did the men of Shechem do? Well, we're going to get somebody else now. So we're through with Abimelech. Now we're going to put our loyalty to this man. So they're aligned with him. Well, what was the celebration and all that? What was the party? This new political alliance. All right, that's right. They went out into the field, gathered grapes, trod them. They pressed the juice. They made the wine. They had a drinking party. In fact, where did they go to do it? Verse 27. In the house of their god, idol worship. And they drank, and while they were there, what did they specifically do? They cursed Abimelech. So already you know where their loyalties lie. So, and Abimelech's not there. That factor comes into play in these next points we want to make here in the story. Gaal scorned Abimelech. Verse 28. Who is Abimelech? And who is Shechem that we should serve him? Is he not the son of Jerubbaal? And is Zebul not his lieutenant, or his second in command, if you will, his overseer? Now, Zebul will come into play just in a few minutes. So then Gaal says, serve the men of Hamor, the father of Shechem. But why should we serve him? Would, therefore, that this people were under my authority, doing just what Abimelech did, then I would do what? What's the first order of business he would do? I'd take care of Abimelech. I'd get rid of him in a heartbeat. So he encourages the Shechemites to officially revolt. He suggested that they follow him. If he were the leader, he would remove Abimelech. And he did one more thing. Last part of verse 29. Come on out. That's right. Let's have the showdown right now. Call them out to battle. Now, there's a problem with that. What's the problem with him calling Abimelech out to battle? He's not there. He's not even there. So how would you characterize Gaal? A coward? Brother Lambert says he called him a coward. Is he a big talker? Well, anybody can talk big when what's the conditions? That's right. The person that you're challenging is not there. Anybody can talk that game. And that's kind of what he's got going on here. Let me illustrate quickly. We don't have a lot of time to spend on this, but let's look at a couple of character flaws that I see on display, at least so far through the story. Number one, the men of Shechem have shown what disposition so far? Not just one time either. They'll follow anybody at the drop of a hat. No principle. And what did Paul warn us about in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33? He says, be not deceived. Evil companions. It will corrupt you. It'll take you down a path that you don't need to go. Someone says, well, I can handle that. No, I'm going to stick with my phrase. You're going to swim with the sharks, and it's going to come back, and it's going to get you later. And you cannot overcome that if you continually put yourself in those very perilous conditions. And I think we see that on their part. That's their character. That's not worthy of imitation. Number two, Gaal, I think, is like many who proudly boast against someone who is not there to answer. Not a brave man. And just real quickly, look at 2 Corinthians 10, just as another example of this very same character. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, it's verses 8 through 11. When Paul wrote his second letter to Corinth, 2 Corinthians 10, verse 8, He's not there. He's writing from Macedonia. But who is at Corinth? There were Judaizing teachers that were there. What were they doing? Well, they weren't just undermining him. They were discrediting Paul. Right? They were trying to tear Paul down so as to have an advantage, if you will, to teach the Corinth Christians their perverted idea of Judaism. And look what they say. Verse 10. This is Paul saying what he knows is the case. For they say, the teachers, they say, his letters are weighty and strong, but his personal presence is unimpressive, and his speech is contemptible. What are they doing? Very same thing is going on here. They tell the Corinthian Christians, well, Paul writes a mean letter, but if he's here personally, we don't think he's worth much. Notice what Paul says. Verse 11. Let such a person consider this, that what, and watch carefully, that what we are in word by letters when absent, such persons we are also indeed when? When present. I'm the same person as I write to you or if I'm there in person teaching you. For we are not bold to class or compare ourselves with some of those who commend themselves. But when they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they are without understanding. What's Gale doing here? He's comparing himself to who? Himself. Saying, challenging Abimelech, I've got you dead to rights. He's not there to answer. Paul faced the same thing. And no doubt, we know there are people in the world who do the exact same thing today. And that's a character flaw. That's a person full of himself. Now, what's helped Gale be so boastful here? Well, he's drunk, all right. And we could talk about the evils of drink as well. But I think he would do this even if he were sober. That's the kind of person that he was. No character. No scruples about being a man full of integrity and doing things the right way. So I just wanted to kind of throw those two application points in our story here. All right. Again, we said, who's Zebul? What were his actions? Verses 30 through 33. Well, he's been identified to us. He was Abimelech's lieutenant, his second in command. Well, he hears all this, doesn't he? And what did he say? Well, what did he do, rather? Pardon? All right, he sends word to Abimelech. So here's what's going on. You need to know what's going on here. And he's are saying he may have been the mayor, or he's some city official of Shechem. So he is obviously still loyal to Abimelech. He informed him of Gaal's boasting. What was his advice? You better put this down. You better come against the city and ambush it and put this rebellion down. And what's Abimelech think of that idea? Does he do it? Yes, that's what he does. So here's Abimelech's actions. This is now Abimelech versus Gale, 34 through 41. Abimelech agreed. He comes with his men in the morning. Gale goes out to see the morning territory. Perhaps he's out there overseeing the city workers. And Abimelech comes down the mountain with his men. What does Gale think he's seeing? All right. Look at verses... verse 36... Gale thinks he sees people coming down from the tops of the mountains. He thinks he sees men moving. What does Zebul say? Verse 36. You know, sometimes the sun will cast this kind of a flowing shadow down a mountain. So it looks like something's moving, but really it's just the sun with the shadow moving down the slope. And so Zebul tells him. Well, did Zebul know what was going on? I think that's a lie, don't you? He didn't tell the truth. No, that's just the sun. Gale looks again, verse 37. No, the people are coming down from the highest parts of the land, and one company comes by the way of the diviner's oak. Gale knew what he saw. What's the next thing Zebul says? That's right. He says, "Where was your? You sure were big talk yesterday. Now that you know what's coming, you don't seem so. All fire ready to face this." Where was your boasting? Who was afraid of Abimelech that we should serve him when you said that yesterday? So what's he tell Gale to do? Go out there and fight him. That's what you said you were going to do yesterday. Well, from one standpoint, is Gale a coward? Does he hesitate to go out and fight? He goes right out. I mean, he does. Verse 39. But in another sense, he is a coward in that he did all his boasting when Abimelech wasn't there to hear it. Well, he is... Yes, you're right. He is between a rock and a hard place. But he does go out and meet Abimelech in battle. How'd the battle fare? Basically. It was no contest. Gale was... His forces were crushed. Abimelech routed the army. Gale fled, as we know. But who really drives Gale out of the city? Zebul drives him out. So we have no doubt where Zebul's loyalties lie. He is firmly with Abimelech. And he drives him out where they cannot return back to the city. Now we have Abimelech versus Shechem. Gale has been taken care of. But the next day, what does Abimelech do? He comes back. Another ambush. Who does he kill this time? He kills all the field workers out there doing their normal duties. He attacks the city, kills the city dwellers who live inside the city proper, raises it to the ground, and then he does one more thing that's contemptible. He sowed it with salt. Why did Abimelech do all this? Well, I don't mean necessarily the salt part. Why did he do all this against Shechem? That's right. You revolted against me. You took sides with Gale. I put him down. Now I'm going to deal with you. This is retribution. So Abimelech didn't take kindly to Shechem's willingness to side with Gale and rebel or revolt against his rule. It is a fulfillment of Jotham's parable. You're right, Freddie, and that judgment would come upon Shechem. So Abimelech was then told, well, the leaders, you kill the people in the city, but the leaders fled for safety. There was a tower or a temple fortress, a refuge, if you will, and they've all holed up in this tower. What's he do? He goes and cuts a tree, lays it on his shoulder, and says what to his men? You do what I do. Just get a bunch of wood. Takes the wood, stacks it around the tower, sets it on fire, and what happens? He kills them all. How many died, it say? About 1,000 men and women died that way among the leaders of the city of Shechem. So this is complete destruction of Shechem, its people, both the normal class, if you will, and the rulers as well. So pretty much has Abimelech dealt with Shechem? Yeah, he's dealt with them. They're done. But we have one more aspect to this. And there's another city in Manasseh, Thebez. It's about 6 miles, some maps will say, northeast of Shechem. Apparently, they had rebelled as well. And he attacks that city. Deals with this the same way he did with Shechem. All right? And then he learns something else. Thebez has a tower or a fortress. And people had holed up in that tower. What's his plan? Well, I did this to Shechem. I'll do it again here in Thebez. Pardon? Yeah, he got too close. That's right. So he gets the wood, obviously tries to place it around the tower to burn it down. But as he approached the tower, Brother Lambert says he got a little too close. What happened that didn't happen in Shechem? All right. It says in verse 52 and 53, as he approached the entrance to the tower, a certain woman threw an upper millstone on Abimelech's head. Now, however tall the tower was, we don't know. But whatever height it dropped from, the stone hit him in the head. An upper millstone. How big would that be? Well, could one woman lift it by herself? I'd probably had some help. But whatever it was, she dropped this stone. It crushed his skull, or cracked his skull. It was a mortal wound. But he did one more thing. What did he say? It'd be too shameful for me to die at the hands of a woman. So he says, what's his armor bearer? Run me through with the sword, and the armor bearer did, so that he wouldn't have to die at the hands of a woman. Quickly, the last two verses, the writer gives us the account. Thus God repaid the wickedness of Abimelech, which he had done to his father, specifically in doing what? Killing his 70 brothers. All right, that's judgment on Abimelech. Verse 57, and God also returned all the wickedness of the sons of Shechem on their heads, and the curse of Jotham was fulfilled. That parable that Jotham told was the fulfillment of that story. Now, again, God never raised him up. God allowed him to rule. God allowed him to have a sway, if you will. But all his wickedness was judged. What's one of the main lessons we should learn from that? It's all throughout the Bible. You cannot act in any way that you want to and expect I'm going to get away with it. Because eventually, God will see to it that you'll be judged for your conduct. If not in this life, we know there's a day of reckoning. So your sins will find you out. Thank you for your attention. No class because of our singing on Wednesday. So if you did not get lessons 11 and 12, they're back here on the windowsill by the nursery. You'll pick that up for next Sunday. Thank you for your comments this morning.